You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
So I'm going to call myself out here. I completely forgot to hit record, and we missed all the intros. Woo! I do apologize.
Yes!
We're going to keep it rolling.
Yeah!
I just started recording. It would not be the Mindless Wrestling Podcast without some kind of fuck-up on my part. Welcome to the show.
This is DJ. I am Jason. That's Rob. We got Ray Cash. Let's get into this thing.
Hey, world.
Terrible.
Before y'all came on the official podcast, we said that Roman Reigns should shoot CM Punk and go.
All right. Yeah. So here we are. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the ChairShot Radio Network. As always, you can find us on thechairshot.com, where we remind you and encourage you to always use your head. We've got a big show lined up tonight. As you've heard all the voices around the room, it's myself, DJ Rob, and Jason, joined by Ray Cash. He's our unofficial fourth chair. We drag him out of retirement a couple year times a year. He's on here tonight. He's got a little something he wants to do with us. This is our Elimination Chamber post-wrap-up show. We're going to talk Elimination Chamber, all the fallout from that, as well as some rhetoric that came out with one of the debuts over the weekend. Big name for those of you that care, Danhausen, was revealed. The way it was revealed, everybody kind of felt like it was shit on. We're going to talk about that because that's going much differently than people would lead you to believe. But first, we're going to talk Elimination Chamber. But before I do that, I want to welcome Ray to the show. I know officially, now that we're recording, Ray, thank you for joining us.
Little old me?
Little old you.
Well, I take umbrage with one thing.
There's nothing little about you, boy.
I take a little umbrage with one thing you said.
Uh-oh.
First and foremost, I come on here more than once a year, dog. Like, if it's that, am I that bad? Y'all gonna fuck around and I'm gonna be knocking on y'all's door every weekend.
Now it's probably, it feels like, you know what, Ray, we love having you on here. It's not often enough, so it feels like it's once a year.
No, this is, so I've been blessed and lucky enough to be doing this for a while, since 2010. So I've been on a few different shows and done a few things. This is by far, and I'm not saying it because I'm in your house, by far, one of my favorite things to do with some of my favorite people, and even my sperm donor. I rock with y'all heavy, man, and it's always a pleasure and an honor to come on and hang out with you boys.
And it's always a pleasure having you. Every time you reach out and say, hey, are you guys recording? The answer is yes, yes, unless I have something very specific planned where I can't fit another guest in.
For sure, for sure.
The answer is always yes.
So, I'm in that producer chair too, my boy. I get it.
Yep. So sometimes you got to look at it and go, I'd love to, but I've already got a 2-hour show planned and I don't want to turn it into a 3-hour. Good God, I don't want to do that to people.
Well, and Ray is not someone that we can just fit in there with a 5-minute cameo. He needs his time to spread his wings and, do his thing.
Yep. So WWE Elimination Chamber came at us from this weekend, and I'm going to kick this whole discussion off by saying this was WWE needed this. I think the last few events since, and quite frankly, since they've switched over to ESPN, the events have been hit or miss as far as the totality of whether or not people like them. I will say for me personally, what I've seen from ESPN has been fine to decent. This is the first thing I've seen on the ESPN side of things where I could say I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing from top to bottom. We'll start with our guest, Ray. What did you think? Just the show in general.
Let me check. It was a home run. I thought it was a home run. I didn't care for a lot of Becky and AJ, the match, but I'm not a dude that watches wrestling for the in-ring part anyway. What mattered, mattered. What was important was important. Jessica Carr is getting most shine as a rep than she ever got as a wrestler. Shout out to Jessica. And they told a fantastic story with the right person winning for the purposes of the story. That was the lowest spot on the card. So, yeah. I mean, it was a home run. It was everything they needed. And of course, Chicago is, I think Chicago's stolen the mecca of wrestling from New York. I think now we have to acknowledge that Chicago.
No, hold on. It's stolen the mecca of marks. Let's be real.
Okay, so that may be fair, Jason, but to that point, I want you to really, really go back. Well, you should hate New York. You're from Boston. We should go back.
I respect what New York does for the industry and whatnot.
I do too, but I want us to really go back and look at it analytically from the last 10 times they've been to Chicago, last 10 times they've been to the New York area. I'll exclude Long Island because those shows over there don't really seem to hit like they do when they're on the island, when they're on the big island. But I really want you to look at them and look at crowd interaction, who's over, who's doing this, even if Punkin' on the card. Just in terms of what the crowd gives the audience, Chicago is killing New York, bro.
Has nothing to do with that. And actually, it kind of does. Their reaction to Danhausen. Okay, you're just a bunch of fucking idiots. Okay, yeah, we'll get out there and we'll do the, 12. Oh, we're gonna kick out of 12 fucking finishers and we're gonna do that. That's what you want. But sports entertainment, CM Punk, one of CM Punk's best pals. Oh no, we can't have a little Broadway show in the middle of our underpants wrestling. That's way too much. Well, fuck off,
Jason. You're missing something here.
What's that?
They were let down by the World Wrestling Federation.
We're going to talk about that.
Chris Jericho.
Guys, put a pin in that.
You ruined my punchline.
I'm sorry. Punchline.
Guys, it's been a great show. We got out of 6 weeks tonight. Everybody, thank you for listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. We'll be back next week where I promise we'll go 7 minutes.
Cheers to everybody.
There we go. Cheers.
No, we will get into that because I've got some thoughts on the whole Danhausen thing, what happened there, and what happened in the next 24 to 48 hours after that. But let's kick it over. Rob, your thoughts on the show in general. Was it a hit for you? Was it a miss? You're in the middle?
I'm leaning towards hit because I actually I really enjoyed the Royal Rumble. So
I did too.
So for me, did too.
Yeah, I would say the Rumble was their first success, and this one built off it.
Yeah, so for me, I like the Royal Rumble better than this show.
Okay.
There was a very big important things that happened, and the things that they needed to do, they did. The things that were really riding on a certain decision being made, I felt like they made the right decisions, and that can make or break a show. Because if you get one of the big decisions wrong on a show, it can kill the whole vibe. So I thought when it came to all the kind of show making or breaking decisions, I think they hit all of those. And that's
If Becky squeaks out, that show changes.
That wouldn't happen. I mean,
I know, but I'm just saying, they hit all the marks. They did everything right.
The finish of the ending of the main event was.
Yep.
That was awesome.
We'll get to, because the ending of the main event, that was if you get it right, the show's great. If you don't get it right, the show sucks.
Yep.
I hate to bring him up on this show, but Vince McMahon was fond of saying they only ever remember the finish.
Yeah,
absolutely facts.
That was a show making or breaking decision on the main event, and they made it. So that was because had they gone wrong with that, then regardless of how good the rest of the show was, people would be crapping on it if they had gone the wrong way in the main event. So. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was, and so same thing with the Rumble, they picked the right winners, and that matters. And so I would say, let me try to give it a grade. I don't know, maybe like B+. I mean, I wasn't totally dialed in for the entire show, but they did everything that needed to be done well. They did well, so I'll give it a B+.
Okay, Jason, how about you? Was it a hit?
I'll give it an A-, and then I'll demerit the whole crowd and everything for the reaction to Danhausen, so we'll get to a B-.
Oh, but I did one more thing I wanted to get, because it's very important. Because the show only had 4 matches, and they got us in and out in 3 hours.
Yeah.
Way too many times.
It was over right at 10 o'clock, wasn't it?
Yeah, way too many times on even these short cards. Way too many times. They're still clocking in at 4 hours.
Yeah.
4 hours for 4 or 5 matches is too damn long.
It's a slog. Even if the matches are good.
Yeah, and even if the matches are Elimination Chamber, Rumbles, whatever, whatever, like, that we know they're going to be long, so we, like, mentally plan for it, even if that's the case, dude, you can't go much beyond that.
I think they found a good flow, though, especially with Triple H believing in this shorter card ideology for, like, the main shows. I think they found a good flow with time.
Well, yeah, they still go too close to 4 hours for some of these for me, for the number of matches. But they got it right. They got in and out in 3 hours this time.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I thought I literally looked down when the last match was finishing up. I'm like, they're going to get us home, and they're going to get this old man in bed by 10 after 10. And I love that. You know, so again, yeah, the flow on this one was much better. The matches were excellent. I love when every now and then, because a lot of the complaint from non-fans, and I think we just lost Jason again, is that WWE doesn't care enough about wrestling. And I love it when a handful of times a year, probably more, I'm exaggerating a bit, WWE reminds us that wrestling is important. And I got to be honest with you, CM Punk and Finn Balor had one hell of a wrestling match. Like, it was great. Like, it was great storytelling. The work in the ring was good. The guys had awesome chemistry. I thought this was an excellent match. Rob, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I guess this was one of the ones that I wasn't totally dialed in the entire time. But because we knew who was winning. But they had an excellent wrestling match that they put on. And, you know, Finn Balor's been doing, like, the wacky Judgment Day stuff for so long. You know, but sometimes, you know, like, he needs to just remind everybody that he's really good at this wrestling thing. You know?
Remember who I used to be.
He's one of the better pro wrestlers on the roster. Like, yeah. So just giving him a chance to showcase and actually get back into that badass character and to just give him a little bit of runway. And I like that they didn't overbook it. You know, it was just, there were a few hints that he was, like, looking to the back, like, should I ask for help, should I not, or whatever. But other than that, it wasn't, you know, running Palooza or anything like that. CM Punk and Finn Balor told the story.
Yeah.
And I think, so you mentioned that you said that every now and then they remind you that wrestling matters to them. I think they do it once a show.
I was exaggerating a bit.
For sure. Now, I will say, to your point, there's a difference between, oh, that was a really good match, and, oh, this is one of the best matches I probably see all year. And Punk and Finn, in terms of just in-ring product, we're going to be looking back at that at the end of the year as one of the top candidates for match of the year. Also, for the things that I like as a wrestling fan, in terms of, like, the ambiance, the presentation, all that stuff. Coming out to Alan Parsons, Sirius,
in Chicago. Oh, my God, the Make-A-Wish kid. He gets everything, man. Oh, your wife gets hired back. Your this gets that. You get to live your dream and do the thing with the old announcer and whatnot. And listen, Sirius is on my fucking playlist. I'm a basketball guy. As soon as that music hit, I knew what the fuck was going on. And I just my eyes almost rolled out of the back of my head.
The song wasn't the thing that got me. The song made me say, oh. But in my mind, I was like, they can't do this without the announcer. That's the, you know, from Chicago. I said, oh, shit.
Bro, tear in your eye, did it?
it that got me hype. In a way, like, that's the type of stuff. So the same way a lot of fans would get hype over a flippy dude's 65,000, that's the type of stuff that gets me. That made me jump on my chair, bro. Like, that had me hype.
Yes, thanks.
And to that point, And to that point, if I may touch on this point as we move forward to the rest of the show, they made a concerted effort to make everybody who came out wrestler-wise in the wrestling matches look like stars, have star entrances, and take their fucking time. Think about the chamber match, particularly the men's. Trick's entrance was like 4 minutes Javon, the ref had to tell Javon, dog, get on the turnbuckle. We got stuff to do. Like, but they were taking their time, bro. And I like that because, as you just said, the old man always says, the last thing you see is what you remember. Not just the last thing, the first thing you see.
Yeah.
You know you like a wrestler from the second they come out the curtain.
I jokingly referred to the men's.
It sets the table.
I jokingly referred to the men's Elimination Chamber match as the Aura Farming Chamber match. It was exactly what it was.
Boy, you want to talk? You know how back in the, I guess, post attitude, so Ruthless Aggression era, how everybody's Trons was just different shots of them and everything. Yeah. That match has about 7 shots for every wrestler.
Yep. And what we're talking about right now is going to play very heavily into the second half of this show. Ray's got a little something lined up, and this is part of what he wants to talk about. We're going to talk about the different booking styles and do some comparisons here at the end of the show. We're going to continue on. Rob, was there anything else on Elimination Chamber here that stuck out with you?
No, I mean, I love the finish of the main event. That closing sequence was just outstanding. And Drew coming in there.
Crossroads. What was it? Just rapid fire finishers. Randy hit the. That was one of the cleanest fucking RKOs, perfectly timed by both guys, that Randy hit on Cody to end that match.
And also,
that was perfect.
And it fit Randy's character because he and Cody, they ganged up on Drew at first. But then as soon as Randy had an opening, he took advantage of the situation.
Oh, the window was cracked, and he smashed that thing wide open.
And so they don't call him the Viper for no reason.
Right, so that the finish fit his character as well as being well executed. And excuse me. A+, whoever came up with the finish, just get A+.
And so far, the things after it, like Randy is just in his own Randy Orton Viper ways, being like, yeah, aw shucks. Sorry, Cody. Like, it's not – we can keep that on the back burner. We don't have to suddenly turn them into enemies week 2.
And we're giving a lot of love, rightfully so, to the finish. But, Rob, you said that fit Randy's character. Speaking of characters, the whole entire way the match was structured was genius. Because Logan getting jumped by everybody.
The Logan Paul.
And then being the guy to eliminate everybody was beautiful storytelling, because there's probably 3 dudes on the entire main roster, men-wise, who everybody hates.
Yeah.
And Logan is the dude that everybody hates. So everybody jumped together to jump, oh boy, and then he took advantage of every small little crack, small little mistake, small little this, only to get outsmarted by a dude who can't even use his left arm. Just genius booking throughout that entire chamber.
It really was. The women's chamber match was really good. I enjoyed it. I thought the women have really shown out in these chamber matches, and I'm so glad they've gotten the opportunity to do so. Raquel, big standout in this one, and as very noticeable, the crowd was starting to finally the crowd is starting to feel it with Raquel. And the Chicago crowd was horribly disappointed when she finally got eliminated.
Bunch of marks.
They booed her elimination.
But they also booed Danhausen, as we're going to get to later. So they can't be trusted. It's Chicago. They can't be trusted.
They also cheered CM Punk. Like, what are we doing?
What? Jason is like, if you're new to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, Jason is like he's like the fan club. He's the president of the anti-CM Punk fan club. Like, that's where we're at here. He did. Jason's still holding a grudge. The only part of this match, and I get it because I get what they were doing, was the double stack elimination. Wasn't crazy about that, but again, I get what they were doing with Raquel. So
yeah, just to me, it felt like
we're short on time.
It felt forced. It felt like I know she did look good, and she did hit all the spots. She didn't, no baby deer legs, no nothing. I will give her full credit. I'm just not a believer. She has no aura. She has no charisma. She has no nothing. I'm sorry. Like, well, so this whole thing is just insane to me.
Obviously,
that they're trying this hard.
I disagree with all of that. But speaking more pertinently to the double stack, they like to give moments to people in these chambers that people will remember. If you remember, they even showed it in the run-up to it. Shayna Baszler had an elimination chamber where she eliminated all five people by submission.
And let me tell you, I'm going to say this again for my money. That was the best women's chamber ever. And
that made sense, too. And that was just like, okay.
Okay, and, so to that point, and I acknowledge you might not like it because you don't see it with her at all. Raquel is the powerhouse of the division. She's supposed to be able to do that stuff. So,
that's the character. So, it is what it is.
I guess just for me, it didn't feel like they were giving her a moment. It felt like they were rushing for time.
That's also how I felt.
Well, if they were rushing for time, then they show didn't give a fuck because the rest of that show took forever. Well, they spaced everything else out.
Well, yeah. I mean, but.
So,
maybe the women successfully were like, okay, hey, you need to shave 5 minutes, and then the rest of the show will be fine. And they did. They shaved 5 minutes, so the rest of the show was fine.
So, disagree.
Let's talk for a minute about the winner of this particular match, and because it has huge implications for WrestleMania. And let me be very clear here: I do not want to talk about what happened on Twitter.
Yeah,
with the women, I don't even want to acknowledge that. I want to talk about the winner and the general feeling of the people who were like, "Oh, Rhea Ripley again." This is WrestleMania. Their original WrestleMania plans were going to be Bianca versus Jade. I fully believe this in my heart. That was the plan. Bianca has been injured for 11 straight months since last WrestleMania. We thought she was going to be the surprise at the Royal Rumble. She was not. She had to undergo surgery to fix this finger. They had to pivot. They had to go somewhere. I have always said about pro wrestling, it is best delivered when you deliver it like a kaiju fight. There ain't no bigger kaiju fight in the women's division than Jade Cargill, save for Bianca Belair, than Rhea Ripley. There is no bigger match at WrestleMania. I'm not talking about Backlash or Great Balls of Fire or whatever the case may be. I'm talking about WrestleMania, the biggest women's kaiju fight outside of Bianca and Jade is Jade and Rhea Ripley. I have absolutely no problem with the winner on this one.
When you think of WrestleMania matches, your first thought should go to, damn, that poster. Like, it's in Vegas, right? Walking down the strip, I can see a 40-foot poster of Jade and Rhea. I can see it. I will say, I am all here for the match. I don't like that Rhea won the chamber, though. And the only reason, and my only qualm is not that I don't think Rhea and Jade should be the match or Rhea should have been the person to fight Jade. It's none of that. My only qualm is we have spoken ad nauseum on this show and all around about how little and almost jokingly WWE seems to have taken the women's tag team division. And for the first time in the history of this division since they made the belts, they have spent 6 to 9 months really making that division something legitimate. They have actually legitimate teams. They have people that are teaming together, not just because, oh, well, you got something to do? No. You got something to do? No. Let's go. No, they're actually teams with stories and reasons to be together, having regular matches, having extreme spots on the card. They've taken main top-level superstars and put them in this division to build it up, and Rhea and Io have been excellent as champions, and I am disappointed that they didn't get the opportunity to showcase those titles as a team at WrestleMania, because now Io got to do something separate because she's not getting left off the card, and now Rhea's over here. We have to hot shot the belts to the irresistible forces, and whatever we're going to do now, we can do, which would still be cool. But can you imagine the gravitas it would have had if Rhea Ripley and Io Sky, who both have been in the last two women's championship matches in WrestleMania past 2 years, both of them, right?
Okay.
And now they're not in this position anymore. I'm going to love Rhea and Jade. I'm going to love it. But I'm a little bummed personally because I just thought that could have been a fantastic kind of showcase for that division. And that could have been a great way to show the girls in that locker room, we give a damn about this division because we put the two biggest stars we have left and gave you this. Just like they had to say, we give a damn about the IC title, so we know what we're going to do. Probably give the GOAT the championship. We're good. So I'm a little bummed, personally.
Okay, let me ask you this. Sound logic. I'm smelling what you're cooking there. Mm-hmm. You, Ray Cash, or the Booker, who do you book other than Rhea to go against Jade in a marquee match?
Yeah.
A 40-foot poster in Las Vegas. Who does Ray Cash put on that poster?
I hate it. I wouldn't have enjoyed it, but Tiffany, there's story there. She beat Tiffany at SummerSlam. I mean, Tiffany beat her at SummerSlam. She beat Tiffany in the rematch and injured Tiffany. Tiffany was gone the entire time out of a match with Jade. There's a story that can be told there. Now, I'm a little over Tiffany in that role, but that story was there and ready to be made.
Let's go!
Okay.
Sorry, right. Jason Tatum just sunk a three.
Okay.
Let's go. We're fucking back, baby. Okay.
I got something to add to everything Ray's saying here. I felt like, look, if they took Rhea and Io and the Bellas and Charlotte and Alexa and Nia and Lash and put them in like a TLC match or something.
Asuka and Kyrie and Bayley and Lyra, it's six of them.
Well, you're not going to put six teams in the match. Come on, now.
And now you got Silver, Kayla, and Roxy.
TLC or
that's way too many women in the match.
No, you can't.
I want you to finish. Let me say this one point. It was never going to be TLC because Nikki can't be in a TLC match because of her neck. They were never going to do that.
Well, honestly, half of those women in that match got knee issues or concussions. Or...
Yeah, they were never going to give those girls that match. Right. So go ahead, cook that. I'm sorry.
But I was going to say, you know, loading up that match with all of those names, that could have made it for night one.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, so, and, you know, once when Rhea winning Chamber, that killed any chance the women made it night one.
I disagree.
Sorry, just to interject. They could have done the TLC match, but we would have been able to circle who in pen who's actually going to go through a table.
I mean, last
but you can't even. You can't probably even legally have Nikki climb a fucking ladder, dog.
Look,
like she's climbing. There's people that can't climb, bro.
Listen. Bree's going to go to the Bree mode. Bella Army's going to get behind her. No. Oh yeah.
Listen,
let's not finish.
Okay, Nikki's got neck issues. Alexa's got concussion issues.
No, I get you.
Okay, Rhea has been concussed and got bum shoulder and a bunch of stuff.
And broken every bone in this area like three times, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like literally we could go down the match card and be like, all right, well, she's not going through the table.
Poor Lash would have been taking every bump in the match.
Exactly. And we're not... She just got here, guys. Let's
don't burn her out yet because she's got a hell of a career coming.
We're past the rookie hazing phase.
Okay, but anyway, all right, but with Rhea, okay, so because Rhea's starting, she's in kind of the second phase of being a top person now. Like she's not climbing anymore, and she's past, you know, that first stage when you're on top and you like win everything and you beat everybody. You know, she's past that now too, but. Mm-hmm. She's still the default title challenger now though.
Guys, she's been on WrestleMania in the past 7 years.
Stop cutting me off.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Are you gonna get there?
Well, I would if you stopped cutting me off. I'm trying to make a profound point here, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, but anyway, I mean so. And so she's the default title challenger now. And she's been on the main roster for 5 years, so she's a young person, but she's a veteran now. So she's kind of at that point as far as, you know, in terms of like maybe some people being tired of her or something. She is kind of at that point, I think, where you do have to manage how you do stuff with her. I mean, cause the crowd's not going to turn on her. No, they're not. But she is kind of at that point where if you keep having to do the same stuff over and over, then you will start to lose interest. So we're kind of teetering on that. I mean, this is kind of borderline right now, but of all the women in that match, she was the obvious one to pick to win the match. I do agree with Ray. I mean, from a booking logic standpoint, Tiffany made more sense for all the reasons Ray said. But the only problem with that is then, okay, if we know for sure they're going to be four women's matches, the two world title matches, Becky and AJ, they're going to have an IC title match, and then there'll be the tag team thing. If you'd put if Tiffany won the chamber and Rhea and Io had gone into the tag team match, then basically out of those four matches, the two world title matches would have had to lose interest. And, you know, that's not the best look, to be honest.
You don't think Stephanie and Liv have interest?
Out of the four matches, they're number four, dude. Come on.
I disagree with that, but okay.
Then out of the, please, okay. You got the Bellas in a tag team title match, if nothing else. That's more people going to be more into that than Liv and Stephanie. More people going to be in more into whatever Rhea's doing. And then you got Becky and Aiden. Yes. I mean, so if you had Tiffany and Jade in a world title match and Stephanie and Liv, your two world title matches have been overshadowed by a tag team title match and the IC title match. And you don't want that.
All right. Well, all in all,
well, I thought the numbers nerd was going to point out that this will be her eighth WrestleMania, and every single WrestleMania she's been in, she's competed for a title. So I don't know why anyone's surprised. Sorry, Rob, I was just trying to put numbers behind your statement.
Eight? Wait a minute.
Remember she wrestled at COVID Mania for the yeah, NXT title.
She was at COVID Mania for the NXT title. It counts.
How could I forget that one? You know I don't.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, you
know, yeah, I wonder who won that one.
The person who should have won, that's who.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, one last thing that happened at Elimination Chamber that had everybody talking. For the last several weeks on Raw and SmackDown, they have been teasing a crate. There's been a crate delivered to Adam Pearce. There's been a crate sent from Adam Pearce over to Nick Aldis. Now the two of them are arguing about the crate. What's in the crate? What's in the box? What's in the box? So we finally get the reveal, and here's where shit gets funny. Because we were on the show last week, and we all pretty much unanimously agreed who we thought it was going to be, and that was egged on a little bit by 48 to 72 hours prior to people were already dropping. It was a real possibility that it was going to be Danhausen. So if you made it to the night of, the moment of, still believing that it might be Chris Jericho, Shane O'Mac, Vince McMahon, I saw Vince McMahon as a possibility, and you were still disappointed, that's on you. If you thought they were going to put a serious wrestler with a serious thing in a gimmick box, you deserve to be disappointed. Like, this was not going to be anybody other than Danhausen. I thought the reveal was excellent. I thought it was really well done. I was extremely sports entertained. I'd gotten up to go to the bathroom, and I didn't even realize they were doing it because I was like, okay, the match just ended. I got to pee. I'm going to the bathroom. I come back out as they're literally lowering the box, and I see these girls come out. I'm like, oh, it's Danhausen. This is great. And it came out. They did a little thing, and the crowd in the moment, and let's be fair here because I want to talk about that. The crowd in the moment, once they realized that it wasn't Chris Jericho, Shane O'Mac, Vince McMahon, they shit on it. They were audibly booing. Well, that is a real thing that happened. Chicago audibly booed Danhausen coming to the ring, which honestly is the most Danhausen thing that could have happened.
He loved it, yes.
But to the character, it was fantastic.
But what spun out of that is more what I want to talk about, because people, the dirt sheets, the people who get paid folding money, livable incomes to write about this shit, started writing about how it was a failure. It was a failure right out of the gate. They were comparing it to the Shockmaster. They were comparing it to the gobbledygooker of all things. And I'm sorry, but if that was your takeaway from all this, you did not watch those two events happen in real time. I'm sorry, because this wasn't even close to that.
They opened the box that was maybe like, I don't know, like 10 feet tall and 5x5. And Danhausen and 8 backup dancers came sauntering out of this apparently infinite box. So they started the show with a fucking magic trick. They went into a little Broadway number all the way to the ring, and then he did a magic trick again and disappeared. If you don't love that, You don't understand professional wrestling. That's it. That's all I'd say about the entrance, man. Like, if you booed that, I don't know what you want from professional wrestling. If you're a super smart crowd and you understand, because Chicago, one of the smartest crowds out there, I'm told, and you understand who Danhausen is, you're not surprised. You're not like, oh, who's this bozo? You all know, or enough of you know who Danhausen is, and you booed it anyway. Like, you're a bunch of losers.
So, may I?
Please.
Go ahead.
So, I'm on both sides of this argument. And I want to talk about the part that directly goes to what Jason said. I acknowledge that when we have this conversation sometimes we have fan glasses on and don't see outside of those glasses. Now, I'm not disrespecting you or regarding your feelings at all. But you said one thing that I think is markedly not true.
Uh-oh.
Not everybody knows who Danhausen is. We have to.
No, I mean, the Chicago crowd, by and large, is wrestling smart from what we can gather. And I just don't buy that.
And I agree with you with the city, but we have to look at the specifics of the situation here. And I don't want to get into the rigmarole of
that
why.
That city sold out the United Center on the rumor that CM Punk might show up.
Got you.
That is a decisively different crowd than we're
I understand.
Than anywhere else.
But hold on, Jason. That's a different company. That means nothing to me. Work with me in the parameters I'm talking about here. WWE right now, and TKO is in a situation where their tickets are higher than they've ever been. Not everybody is able to go to these shows like they were 4 or 5 years ago, or able to, say, go to a show that AEW has, where they're giving away tickets for free if you go to the college that the schools are that's on the campus of. So number one, these are not all necessarily the most diehard of fans. WWE also, too, as a fan base, especially at the shows, and all of us have gone to these shows regularly, have a lot of casuals and families. There are not a lot of people who are in the casual wrestling space who know who Danhausen is. Now, Chicago helps a lot more because of the city and the wrestling ethos of the city. But by and large, I would argue maybe 50 to 60% of that fan base knew who the guy was. A lot of people were looking like, who the fuck is this dude wearing clown makeup? Now, that's not a diss, because I think Danhausen as a character is massively valuable. But I think to a lot of people who don't know who he is, who may have been expecting someone or something else different. By the way, if you're expecting Jericho, you're a dumbass. But anything else other than that, I am understanding of the disappointment in the moment, because we don't know, most like casuals, who the dude is. That's the
I
only
don't understand the extra step of booing, though. You know what I do when shit like that happens on the show?
You boo what you don't like. They booed Triple H after...
No.
They booed Triple H after John Cena tapped out. You boo whatever you... Okay. That's how they tell people.
Let me defend Jason's stance here. I don't think
I'm talking
they
about... They would have just sat on their fucking hands and there would have been crickets in there, dude. They're booing because they're a bunch of babies.
Yeah, no, here... And
if they didn't understand it, if they didn't, like, what the fuck was that? Like... They'd just be looking at each other in confusion, and we've seen it 1,000 times in wrestling shows. There'd be silence.
Everyone would just be like,
what the fuck was that? They were booing. Like, what are we doing here?
Okay, let me defend Jason here. Yeah, let me get a word in here. They weren't shitting on Danhausen. They were shitting on the fact that this didn't meet their expectations.
That's what
they were booing. They weren't booing Dan, but the rhetoric that spun out of that from all these people who, like I said, get paid folding money to analyze this shit.
Yes.
Was, oh, they booed Danhausen. They didn't boo Danhausen. Okay, they never did. You know, what they were booing was the
situation,
disappointment of their own expectations.
And in the moment of the show in which it happened, right after this match, this was right between the CM Punk match and the main event.
Yes.
The thing is, the only guy I could think of is Jericho. And like, really, you were booing because it wasn't Chris Jericho? I stand by my statement. You're a bunch of fucking idiots.
It could have been anything or anyone. It could have been the WWE 2K26 advertisement. Could have been anything. But the disappointment in that moment Ford beat. I guarantee you this. For sure.
An advertisement gets booed.
If it was somebody who you know the crowd knew, they would have liked it. They would have accepted it more than someone that they didn't know. They didn't know who the guy was.
Fair enough. I just don't get the extra step of booing. And that when you don't recognize one and then there's just silence.
Once you get over the idea, and you won't. I get that. I respect that. But if you can come to the conclusion and understanding that they didn't boo the guy, they booed the situation, then I think you'll accept it a lot easier.
Yeah.
But they didn't say fuck Danhausen. No, they didn't like the situation, so they booed the situation. They do this all the time.
The best part of this whole discussion, though, is that literally 48 hours later, everybody's pivoting on the Danhausen thing. Like, everybody that shit on it and, oh, Taskmaster, you know, oh, Shockmaster this, oh, Gobbledygooker that, is suddenly pivoting because, one, the dude's awesome. And there's a – I won't mention him by name because I don't want to give him any mileage. But, again, somebody who makes a living in doing this stuff on the app formerly known as Twitter said, I don't understand Danhausen. I don't see how that character fits into WWE. Bro, you get paid to write about this shit. I think maybe you ought to have a fundamental understanding of what you're watching. If you think Danhausen does not fit on the same show that brings us Psycho Pirate or Psycho Clown and Mr. Iguana, doesn't fit there, please stop.
And it's a 3-hour children variety show where they solve their problems with violence most of the time.
Right.
And tell me the clown spooky dude doesn't fit that, who loves show tunes and video games. Like, tell me that doesn't fit to a T. Yeah.
And to your point, DJ, I think it was accepted Monday so positively because of the context in which he was put in. Now, yes. To use Mr. Iguana. If Mr. Iguana main evented, let's say, Backlash, fighting Roman Reigns for the World Championship, we would shit on that. Because he don't need to be nowhere near that. Danhausen's his entrance or debut was in a main event spot.
He was sandwiched in between two big matches. I get it.
You make a great point. Like, I think most people can understand and see his value to the show. It's just his value to the show. Same way. I'll give you the same, even more salient argument. Everyone on this show loves Ron Killens. We all love this motherfucker. Ron Killens has no business as the R-Truth character as exists in any type of major championship match. Now, if there's a joke, like the scene, the thing fit because of the joke of 10 years of him saying it's my favorite superstar, right? But if tomorrow, WrestleMania, it's out of nowhere, R-Truth versus this dude versus Penta for the IC title, people are like, what?
You're right. And that makes sense. Oh, but all in all, I think Danhausen has ended up being a hit. I think he's going to be a huge benefit to this company. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with him. I thought Monday night was a hell of a lot of fun. And the dude's already a top merch seller. So we've already beat the other allegations. Why don't we do this? Why don't we regroup this show, take a little commercial break? Wait, Rob has something to say. I thought he was waving at his kids. He's like looking off camera and waving. So I'm like, maybe one of his kids came in the room, but Rob threw a flag on the play. Rob, go ahead.
First of all, it was just fun to see Ray tell somebody else they were wrong. But look, honestly, you know, since before, sometimes you book TV for the pay-per-view. Sometimes you book the pay-per-view for TV. They were booking the pay-per-view for TV with that segment. They needed to get him out there so people could just see him and be interested in whatever the hell this is. And then that way, I mean, it's set up when he was out there on Monday night. And so you take the L, some people booed, okay, fine, whatever. We needed to get him out there and then to set up Monday night. So to me, it did what it needed to do.
Yeah. like I said, the Chicago crowd, Ray brings up a very valid argument. And I understand Jason's side, like, yeah, one, just in general, watching a again, as Jason says, a children's variety show where people solve their problems in their underpants. How you could look at that whole with violence, how you could look at the totality of that and not look at that and go, that is one of the most WWE things I've ever seen. You know, the spooky dookie creature feature nerd coming to the ring with dancing girls to a big smoke show is the most WWE thing you can do for sports entertainment. And we often forget that that's what WWE does. I thought it was incredible. I think it's going to be fun moving forward. I know enough about Danhausen to know about the character. I don't know enough to know how much of a good wrestler he is. I've seen mixed opinions that he's actually better in the ring than some people give him credit for. I've had other people say he's average at best. I don't care. I think the character is going to be tons of
fun. He gets by and he elevates. He gets by if necessary, and he elevates himself certainly with who to the level of whoever's in the ring if they can bring him up. So, okay. Because I've seen Danhausen wrestle a few times, and it's been wildly different experiences.
Okay. All right. And that's good enough for me for my Monday, Tuesday, and Friday night wrestling shows, and occasionally on a premium live event on Saturday. Those are perfectly acceptable things for me in the way that I consume professional wrestling. So why don't we regroup a little bit? We're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, Ray Cash has a little something, a little exercise he wants to do with us. I'm going to let him explain that on the backside of all this. Before we go to break, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the T-shirt options available from your favorite Chair Shot Radio Network podcasts, including this one, the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. That's right. We do have a T-shirt represented up there. Go check them out. Pick one up. The starving artist on these shows will personally thank you. Your bodies will thank you if you pick one up in soft style for just a couple extra bucks more. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. We're going to go to a quick break. And we are back. Thank you for listening to this messy, messy episode of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Our guest, Ray Cash, here came to me with an idea a few days ago. He said, DJ, when are you guys recording? I said, Ray, this day. I said, you are welcome on. He's got a little idea he wants to do. I'm going to turn the floor over to Ray, let him explain the parameters of this next segment. We're going to get rolling. Ray, the floor is yours.
Thank you, my beautiful bearded brother. So I always like to give credit where I get these ideas from, because I'm an idea guy, and I'm very much things come to me from people talking or other ideas, and they just come to me. So shout out to the Masked Man Show, David Shoemaker and Kazim from Uwide, one of my favorite shows that I actually listen to. And they were talking about who necessarily is the best booker in professional wrestling right now. Now, of course, you can go deeper than the main three, but the main three really right now are Triple H, Tony Khan, Shawn Michaels. You could talk about Ghetto. You could talk about, I think, Delirious and Tommy Dreamer are booking TNA and all the other people. Shout out to Uncle Taker, by the way. We were just joking in the break, who's doing a great job with Triple H. But stick with the big three. And so if you're not familiar, I created a show, a series that DJ was so kind to do with me this past year called The Total Package, which is the kind of blueprint to find out who is the best wrestler in the world based off a series of criteria that makes them the quote-unquote total package. I thought, well, we can kind of do that with bookers. So I came up with three criteria that I think every booker needs and should and needs that they do and should be good at, like parameters. So the first one, of course, is creative direction. And by creative direction, I mean essentially building the wrestler's character, creating their character, their motivations, how they're used and involved in stories and storylines in general. Then, of course, there's matchmaking, which is the physical act of making matches, making the cards, picking feuds, picking steps, setting up an actual card, the parameters of what the show is built on. And then there's presentation. So that's not just how a wrestler looks, but how a wrestler's presented to the audience, to the roster, to the show as a whole. So those are the three main components that a wrestling booker does. And so when we're talking about the three guys that I mentioned, I think they all have their pros and they all have their cons. Some have some terrible low cons. Some will have the very, very high highs. And so I'll start off by bringing, pardon the pun, but talking about Tony Khan. I think Tony Khan is a superb, absolute, excellent matchmaker. He makes matches people want to see. He makes matches that in the ring, these two guys, he's like Joe Silva in the UFC. These dudes going to give me a show. I think he also, although being fantastic at matchmaking, is a subpar creative guy. I say subpar because he has moments where he hits home runs. There's a lot of Hangman Page's career. There's been a lot of lulls, but Hangman's hit more home runs than almost anybody in their main men's division. The Mariah May, call me Blake Monroe now, Tony Storm feud. A lot of that was a home run. He has hit very, very high, but his highs, he's like almost like Adam Dunn. It's home run or strikeout. So I say
he hit a home run and he struck out in the same swing. When he put on that amazing main event and he put on that main event worthy match with Blake, and he got the story there. They delivered the whole nine yards. That goes on last, Tony.
Giancarlo Stanton. There you go. Now,
yep.
In terms of presentation, the shits. I think the way he presents wrestlers to the audience, I think the way he presents wrestlers to the other wrestlers on the show, I think the way he presents the show as a whole is awful. I think his fascination with bringing the new toy in and then forgetting he got a new toy, hi Iconics, is god awful. What's up, Champa? Terrible. So that's the package Tony Khan is as a booker to me. Does that make sense to you guys? You kind of get the gist of what I'm saying?
I get exactly where you're going.
Yeah. Okay. No, because he delivers because you know what? Credit to him, man, because sometimes, why wait? I've got this guy on my roster. I've got that guy on my roster. They're going to wrestle on Wednesday.
Yeah, I
can't knock that.
Go ahead. You said something, Dean. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I see where you're going with this. So are you just going to go around the room and just do it like that, or how are we going to do this?
Well, sure. Do you guys have any thoughts on my opinion on Tony Khan? Do you disagree? Rankings of Tony stuff?
Well, I can go.
Yeah, I have some, but go ahead, Rob.
Okay.
Because we can go with the other guys next.
I mean, I agree about the matchmaking thing because, you know, one thing with one of my big knocks on Triple H is some matches he just waits too long to do.
Mm-hmm.
And with Tony, now sometimes Tony does it too early or he does it on the wrong show. There's some matches that should be on pay-per-view that he puts on TV, or some matches should be on Wednesday or on Saturday. But at least you know you're going to get the match with Tony. You know that Kenny Omega is going to wrestle Swerve.
Like, if they book Kenny Omega versus Roman Reigns on Wednesday night, like all of a sudden Roman Reigns shows up, and then just the next week you see Roman Reigns versus Kenny Omega on Dynamite,
but
that match actually happens.
Yeah,
but on Raw, that match gets interrupted after 2 minutes.
Or if it happens at all, if it ever happens.
Tony delivers it, man.
So with Tony, you know you're going to get the match. With like I said, maybe it may come too early, be on the wrong show or whatever, but you know at least it's going to happen. Yes. So as far as making matches, I give him an A for that. Now, where I will knock him is that he doesn't seem to realize that. Okay, I know we say wins and losses don't matter, but certain wins and losses do matter. And when you bring people in, somebody's new, and then you have them lose four matches in a row, but your logic is that, well, it's a 5-star match, so we're going to be okay with it. No. Okay, you can lose one match and it's no problem. But what we always say here, if I see you lose all the time, what are you?
A loser.
Exactly. So, and there are too many times where he just hangs too many L's on people too close together, you know, with the idea that, well, it's a 5-star match, so it'll be fine. And then, you know, and then people just lose faith in them. And so, I mean, that's my biggest knock on him. And then the other one is Jonathan. The women's division is going really well right now, but he still got way too many. I mean, he signed too many women who should not be wrestling on television. And yeah, at the very beginning, that was the case. And there's still some women he puts on TV that should not be wrestling on television.
So that's a presentation hack, is it not?
Well, I mean, if they get in the ring and they stink, that's not like a new presentation, okay?
Well, what I mean by presentation
that's
is
booking, they're not that's presentable. Matches, that's kind of everything.
Oh, well,
yeah, put them on the show.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're right. That's okay.
That's true.
Yeah, so yes.
Well, the only thing I'll say about that, I want to interject here real quick. I've seen some women whose presentation coming out looks pretty good, and then the bell rings.
Yep.
And then you get the rest of the story, and the rest of the story stinks.
Yeah.
Oh, Julia Hart, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. All right. I was just about to say, we don't have to name names. We all know who we're talking about.
Yikes. she has really dope hat, though.
Her entrance is incredible.
But
the bell rings.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just – so, yeah, I mean, the best thing about him is that if King Kong and Godzilla get signed – they're going to be ran. You know, you're going to see it. It's not going to be put off for years and years and years, or until the right time, and it may not happen at all. You know, like we still haven't had a singles match between Rhea and Bianca in 5 years. You don't have to worry about anything like that with Tony. Those are strong. Like I said, the presentation. Is, you know, I think that's his weakest quality.
That's why I use the Joe Silva comp for him. Joe Silva is the matchmaker at UFC. He does nothing else but makes fights. Mm-hmm. But every fight is he makes them. That's his only job. And he makes great fights. He has nothing to do with booking. He has nothing to do with presentation. He has nothing to do with marketing. He just makes fights. He makes great fights. Tony makes great fights. The other stuff, he is not very good at, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Tony does my favorite booking thing. Like, honestly. It's going to be this guy versus that guy. Listen, it's the 9:15 match. There's no story. They're just going to wrestle each other. Why? They work here. And it's apparently a fighting federation.
Oh, the cruiserweight hour you're talking about, like WCW stuff? The cruiserweight hour?
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. And Tony will just do a random match that doesn't have a story that goes anywhere or whatever. It's you both work here and you fight for a living. Okay.
Yeah. Dave, am I tripping on the way I looked at it?
No, because your way of looking at it is very similar to where I'm at. Tony books, to his credit and his detriment, books this like a fan. Like, mm-hmm. Somebody booking, and people joke about him. It's his E-Fed. He's playing WWE Universe with all these people. And the like you said, that's a good thing for those of us who just want to see two good wrestlers get in the ring and wrestle. Like, you put Tommaso Ciampa and Roderick Strong in a ring together, Deej is going to tune in and watch that shit. Because that tickles my work rate nerd fancy. But at the same time, as we talk about presentation, why should I give a shit? Because neither one of them there feels like stars. Very few people there feel like genuine stars. Great wrestlers, great in-ring talent. The presentation of everyone there leaves me going, and I shouldn't say everyone, because there are people there I genuinely like. You know, like there are people that I have gravitated to. I love Willa Nightingale. Some of that is just she has a magnetic
personality. I just want to point out, I hope everybody's watching SmackDown right now. Please turn on SmackDown if you're not. Leave it on mute. It's fine.
I don't have access to it.
Don't spoil it for me because I'm watching the show.
But the wrestling part of it, Tony's a fan of that. That's what he wants to see. And this is when Ray first pitched this to me in chat, I mentioned to him, I said, we're making an argument of bookers versus promoters.
Yeah.
Tony books like a fan. Tony ain't a promoter.
Yeah,
and I think that's the biggest difference here. And so, yeah, I'm right on line with where you are. The presentation stinks. The matchmaking is probably – he's probably top of the pile for matchmaking.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is where I think he falls behind.
So then let's flip it and let's talk about the other big dog on the hill. We'll do Sean last because I think that's going to be the most variance of the conversation. But Triple H. So I posit that Triple H is great at presentation. If you look at, if you follow social media on Twitter, on the Twitter machine, word to Uncle Bubba, if you look at the Twitter machine, they just released a blurb today showing Triple H making Trick's entrance at the Elimination Chamber. And they even joked about how Bobby Roode's pissed off with him because they stole his gimmick with the little flipping little thing, right?
Yeah.
But there's so many behind-the-scenes videos where you see him literally telling the wrestler, this is how I want you to do it, and it comes out, and it's iconic fucking entrances. So I think he's excellent at things like presentation, making people look great, putting people in situations where they look good. We talked about the Danhausen situation and how that was really controversial on Saturday, but on Monday, everybody loved it. Why? That's presentation, right? I think he is good at creative direction. So I had to give like a grade, like a 7.5 or like a B to B plus. He has a lot of positives. He doesn't have any negatives, but I don't think he's consistent enough with like high level consistency to be great or excellent at creative direction. And I think he's a dead C mid at matchmaking. I don't think he's terrible because he does make a lot of high end marquee ass matches. And Rob, you'll enjoy this, and Jason, you both of you will, but you'll appreciate this. I think he has the level of patience that most bookers don't have, because most bookers would not have had the patience to redo Cody Roman twice at 40. Like, that is a skill in itself to say, stay the course. So that's what but of course, you, Rob, you mentioned the other, one of the more egregious things. We have 5 years both on the main roster. They both debuted literally on the same show. We have not seen Rhea versus Bianca in any form or fashion. I understand they're young enough where we can still do it, but you never know what could happen. Bianca could have kids and not want to wrestle anymore. Rhea could want to go to AEW to be with Buddy. Anything could happen, right?
And we lost Bianca for a year already.
Yeah, over a finger. Yeah. And I'm not saying that diminishing it. I'm saying it could be that small. So
right, you never know how the die is going to roll.
We are only ever one bad day from that match never happening, ever.
Yeah.
Like, God forbid, but that's the reality. Like, we've seen it. We've literally seen it happen in the last 5 years. We've seen a career end.
Yeah. So, word to Big E. Go opposite. Yeah. Jason, how do you feel about the Triple H?
Excuse me. I feel pretty similar to you. I think more hits than misses, definitely. Sometimes some of the storylines, I think he can get a little lost in the weeds when it comes to long-term storytelling.
Agreed. Like,
he's better at it overall than probably the other two, but because they've started doing things like someone will be in the background of a promo and that won't come up for 3 months. Like, and they've done awesome stuff like that, but then sometimes I feel like they get lost in the weeds, and it's like, okay, man, you could have ended this 3 pay-per-views ago. So I think that, but I mostly agree with you. A presentation, you know, I mean, it's WWE, but also they are, you know, it's not just the budget. It's the fact that they are doing new things and trying different stuff, and they put over – it's the big top circus, man. They put out – everything is the biggest thing to ever be, and WWE's always the best at that, and Triple H has not lost that in any way. Like, you know, Royce Keyes has gone into witness protection, waiting for his real debut, but instantly Royce Keyes was the thing.
And he's on the show every Monday and Friday, they show that clip of him talking to Stephanie.
Yeah, right? It's coming. It's coming.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason, I just want to say, because I agree with everything you said. Like, there's no difference of opinion. But I do want to stick up for Triple H just a little bit in that Triple H really got hot and really got going 95, 96. From that point on until he retired, wrestling was so frenetic in terms of story moves fast, title change, bing, bang, boom, that I think he overcorrected
yeah.
in going too slow.
That's a good way to put it. I totally believe that.
Deej, go ahead, bro, and then we'll get to you, Rob, after that.
Yeah, again, we go back to Booker versus promoter. Triple H is an excellent promoter. He makes you feel it. He makes you believe in it. WWE has been aces on presentation, not only their wrestlers, but their shows. Nobody's topping them. They're lapping the crowd in every conceivable friggin' way. He himself has said, from a booking standpoint, he doesn't book, and it is from his own mouth, we don't book, and he doesn't book with the mindset of, oh, are these guys going to have a good match? Yeah. He's booking from the standpoint of, are they going to be able to tell a good story? And that's, again, the promoter talking, not a booker talking. Now, he puts people in the ring who have fantastic matches together. You know, and I want that to be very clear. I want the rhetoric that WWE doesn't have good wrestling to stop. Because as Ray said, and rightfully corrected me earlier on in this show, I jokingly, tongue-in-cheek, said once a year WWE reminds us that wrestling is important. Ray says they do it once a show, and Ray is correct. Once a show, they have an excellent to fantastic wrestling match. And, you know, but that is not Triple H's focus, and it's not his strength. He was a great sports entertainer. He was a fine wrestler in his day. His focus was not the wrestling. His focus was all the other stuff, and he was excellent at all that. So, yeah, from the presentation standpoint, nobody better right now than Triple H. From the creative standpoint, I would say of the three, he's the strongest. I would say all three of them have weak spots there. All three of them definitely have blind spots to certain talents on their rosters, but that's any booker. And you could go down to the indie promotions as well. A booker of any show is going to look at somebody and go, okay, I see it for that guy. I don't see it for this girl, you know, and that's it. But they could be the most talented worker on their roster. But if they don't see it for the show they're trying to produce, they're not going to do shit with them.
You made me laugh, DJ, when you said that Triple H is a fine wrestler. I just had visions of Triple H doing the Indian Deathlock, and people being like, what?
Yeah. Every now and then he would pull some sneaky shit out. You're like, oh, damn, the guy is that good.
So. All right, Rob. Am I off base? Am I on base? Are you kind of with me on my assessment?
Okay. Yeah, no. I think if Triple H was your head coach or your GM, you would make the playoffs every year. And you would always make the playoffs. You would always, every year. And
so, you about to call him Mike fucking Tomlin, dog. This is wild, bro.
I was thinking that, yeah. But
this is wild, son.
But the thing is, because like if I was going to hire one of these guys to run my weekly show, I would hire him. He'd be the one I would pick. But now where he's lacking, that we talked about, sometimes just takes too long to make certain matches, just holds off forever. But also, and this is what was from on the women's side in particular, it's like he takes a lot of steam out of it. You know, I mean, like they have some excellent women wrestlers, like he presents them great individually, but they're just, I mean, they're just kind of like holes in continuity as far as building matches. A lot of women's matches, they get like minimal amount of build. They might get maybe 2 weeks of build to go into the PLE, and they don't get a whole lot of substance to it. And so, you know, I mean, and then one thing I was looking into that a lot of when they book the women's matches for the PLEs, like the world title matches, like a whole lot of them are just end up being one-offs. And so you just, you know, you don't build any lore, you don't build any history between, you know, them. It's, I mean, a lot of them, they're just one-off matches. They have the match and then it's over and then both people go their separate ways. And you just, it's just hard to build anything like that. Like right now, like, you know, whoever wins between Roman and Punk at WrestleMania, Drew McIntyre could walk out there the Raw after WrestleMania and challenge either one of them. And they got backstory for days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like they just like they don't build that with on the side. They do. And I mean, the closest to come like this, even with they have with Rhea and Io, because they had several matches last year, and they talk about going back to NXT, blah blah blah. But like with so many of the other matches on the women's side, they don't build history, and it makes the matches less important. It makes the matches feel less important because, again, a lot of these matches are just one-offs. And also, I feel like just on both sides of the roster, like when it comes to, like, you know, booking somebody with a title, a lot of times it feels like he gives people titles as a reward.
Yeah, but that's a Vince thing. That's not just a him thing. Vince.
But no. Okay, well, fine. Okay, well then they're both guilty. But not as like a point in the story. It's like, oh, you got over. Okay, we're going to give you this belt. Always.
Yeah.
And because a lot of times there just aren't plans. If it feels like he'll book you to win the belt, and then there are no plans for what comes afterwards. Like last
year. No, that's fair.
Yeah, because last year, for example, okay, Io wins the belt. She wins the big match at WrestleMania. She beats Rhea and Bianca. And then she literally does nothing for 3 months. Literally.
Not with you.
And that happens way too often. And then also, the other thing, you know, the other criticism I've had of him is that, like I say, he books to the calendar. So, you know, if you come out of WrestleMania with the belt, then there's a good chance you're going to hold it till SummerSlam.
That's another Vinceism. So
he sat
under that tree.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing, Vince, because, well, actually, I looked into this. Okay. Because, like, Vince booked, you know, he booked a lot of title changes between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. He wasn't afraid to swap a title between the Rumble and WrestleMania. He wasn't afraid to swap a title in that SummerSlam period.
So let me ask you this, because we do need to get out. I know we got a time correct. No, you're good. But I want to ask you this one retort to that. Is that old Vince, like, in his heyday, 97 to 2000 Vince, or is this 2014, 2015 Vince?
Because
older Vince fell into the same tropes that Triple H is doing now.
This was between the recent brand split and when he stepped down.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so more contemporary Vince.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's fair enough. And I'm not saying you do like, no, you shouldn't do like the one night title reigns, but.
But I got you. There needs to be more variants. I'm with you.
Yeah, completely. Yes. Yeah. Some of the titles.
Well, because then it becomes predictable. If the titles only change hands in the big four, then, you know, why is the rest of the programming worth watching?
Yeah. So, I think, you know, some of these 6 month title reigns need to be 3 months. Yeah.
You know? So we agree on that.
Yeah.
So let's do Sean last. Cause you know, DJ, I know you try to keep this thing about 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Sean is, I think, is going to be the most interesting because of, everybody looks at things so differently with NXT. And I also think Sean is the only one that has a curve because Sean is working with people who actually haven't done this before. So
and,
with that.
And Mike could take it away from him any day.
Well, and the whole point of being there is to learn how to do it.
Yeah. And get moved up.
So he is booking a different show.
Yes.
Than the other two.
So with that being said, I think Sean is really good at creative direction. I think you want to give him like a B+. I think he's terrible. Terrible at matchmaking. I watch NXT every week. It's my favorite show. And I can't tell you how many times that he books a match I care to see. And when he does, Sol, Ruka, and Zarya, it's way too fucking late and nobody cares anymore. You know, or they're on their way out and they gotta do the honors real fast and give people the match that they wanted to see. For, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 months, almost as similar to the tropes that Rob was talking about with Hunter. But of the three we mentioned, Sean gets A++++++++ in presentation. More than anybody. These are people you've never seen before, never heard of before, most of them. Some of them, of course, are indie people or whatever. But people you've never seen before, heard of before, cared about, thought of, none of this. Wrestling in front of a studio with like 300 people who are the same motherfuckers that show up every damn Tuesday. And I guarantee you in 2 months, you're going to care about that wrestling. That is a skill. That is a skill. The way he can bring someone on your screen and almost immediately you care or you are intrigued or you are involved. You, something about you has connected to that character positively or negatively from a heel standpoint or a face standpoint. I think that is by far the greatest accomplishment of any of the three because, you know, we look at all these people and of course there's a lot of people, they have time. You have to have time to build on these things. But when you're talking about a show of developmental and everybody come out of there normally as some type of a star, that's presentation, my boy. And he's also making these presentations. I was listening to Trick Williams do an interview with Ebro, Lauren Rosenberg, their show that they have now since they're not a Hot 97 anymore. And he was explaining, you know, and Ebro knows the whoop that trick thing. I was like, well, you probably, you great and everything, but you know, Hustle and Flow, Terrence Howard, people know that stuff. He said, you don't understand. The song, my song, is just 808s. It has no words to it. The fans chant that. You know who started that? 20 people in NXT. The Obafemi Mbaku chant, 20 people in NXT started that. That's a Sean thing. So, DJ, you're the only one that didn't go first and then go around the horn, and then it is back in your capable hands, my bearded, beautiful brother.
Yeah, I agree. Again, once we're completing the trifecta here, man, I agree with everything you said. The match, again, NXT for me, just in turn, and some of that is just me looking at it from somebody who used to do this. I love watching the talent develop. I love looking at who may actually have the next thing and looking at who they want to be the next thing and try to determine whether they have it. And then trying to just say, like, we discussed Braun Breaker on this show 3 years ago when everybody was saying, send Braun Breaker up now, send Braun Breaker up now. And we collectively on this show, we said, no, keep him down there another year.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Obafemi down there another year. We said it with all three of them. Trick Williams, keep him down there another year. And it has done wonders under Sean's tutelage because, again, now we're two of the three of those guys, and I'm going to plant my flag here, are generational. Trick Williams and Obafemi are this generation's Rock and Austin waiting to happen.
Man, you better throw some respect on Javon Evans too, my boy.
Well, dude, I'm not. That's that, and that's the hard part of this discussion is that dude is awesome. I love him.
Yeah.
I love him, but I said as presented right now.
I give it to you.
Date. In 2026, the two guys, 1A and 1B, are going to be Trick Williams and Obafemi.
Yep.
And that's, again, like you said, all presentation. You've got kids and nanas doing the Obafemi walk on social media. Dude, that shit is iconic. Whoop.
It's, right. And Trick's got the whoop that trick. As soon as Javon finds that hook or whoop, that thing,
then he's
a dude. Rocket ship.
He has it. They just don't want to do it. If you know what I'm talking about, it's the 6'7".
And they would lose their fucking.
But think about it. He has a shirt and he does say it in promo sometimes. But dog, yeah. I think even WWE is like, okay, dog, we'll give you the shirt. But come on, bro.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
So, but yeah, no, it's again, presentation. NXT, so again, just it's the most easy to watch wrestling show on North American TV for me. I agree with you to a line about the matchmaking. I give them a little more credit than you do. I've seen some damn fun matches in NXT.
Oh, yeah,
I think
for
he saved the good stuff for the premium live events.
Yeah.
I think his timing in his shows is excellent. The premium live events, the shows flow better. So yeah. The creative process is very smooth. So, yeah, that's about where I stand with Sean. I think he's a good mix of booker and promoter.
But let me give you just okay. Did anybody really want to see Blake Monroe and Jordynne Grace?
I did. Honestly, okay. I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Yes.
Respect to y'all. I had no interest in that.
I did. I had big
respect. And Jordynne Grace should have been called up even before that. But respect to that. But another thing,
she should have gone straight to the main roster.
Well, I'm fine with her getting her feet wet because she did a cup of coffee when she was still signed. To, you know, to Silver yeah. NA, yeah. But I'm sorry, I just jumped in, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Next.
Okay. Turn is it?
You can go, Rob. Knock it out.
Go ahead, Rob.
Okay. I agree with most of what y'all are saying. Now, to me, Sean's biggest strength was, I think he's great at creating and presenting them as characters.
Yep. Yeah.
And so not, you know, and then even like the little wacky backstage segments that they have, they actually, those, like, they have some real, you know, oomph and some real energy to them. Right. Because sometimes even like Raw and SmackDown, the backstage stuff, it's like they're reciting the script, you know, and even like the stuff on NXT, you know, they're not as polished. So sometimes it doesn't sound as good, but it also doesn't sound as rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he does a great job at that. Now, the matchmaking, yeah, I mean, because, yes, there are a lot of weeks where the matches are just like, okay, sure. And I mean, they do save the best stuff for, you know, the PLAs. Yeah, absolutely. And then like, I think you also got to give him credit for the fact that, you know, he's working with a roster. Yeah, any week, one of those people might be gone. You know, they might be called up. And then sometimes they don't get called up when we think they should, and then he has to find something more for them to do for another 3 or 4 months.
Or half his talent gets released. So he's got to find something when he had
Ali was due for a title match and they released him.
Well, Tatum Paxley was in the middle of a 3-woman tag team.
And they released
Gigi Dolin and Shotzi Blackheart. Yeah. And they released 2/3 of that team, left her floundering, and he had to figure out what to do with her. Yeah. Well,
remember Wes Lee's partner got fired and he came in to be a tag team. And, you know, they were able to come up with all of that stuff for Wesley to make him a legit singles champion.
Well, Wes always had it in him, but yeah, you're right.
But, I mean, the Booker's got to believe in you. And the Booker has to make the effort to get you there. And not just,
for sure.
And not just, you know, write you off as, oh, well, we had a tag team and one of them got fired, so we'll just, you know, job out the other guy until we can let him go. You know, I mean... So I give him, you know, all those things. I would say that the matchmaking sometimes can leave a bit to be desired. Honestly, if I had to pick a fault, that would probably be the biggest one. But I think for working with what you have and getting the most out of what you have, I think he's the best. Look, if Triple H is Mike Tomlin, then Sean is Larry Brown. Larry Brown had Allen Iverson and a bunch of guys and got to the finals.
Well, sure, but every Larry Brown team that he's ever coached hated Larry Brown. They just really worked.
That's true,
they love Sean.
Okay,
so they do. They love some Shawn Michaels down there.
Bad analogy. Bad. Okay, who's somebody? Well, you know what I mean.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, you know, you give him two top-notch wrestlers, or, you know, you give him, he'll make do what you have, right? And even though, again, next week, 3 people might get called up, 2 people might get released, and you know, 3 people that he had ready to go won't get called up, and now he's got to hang on to him for another 6 months. I think that's what happened with Saul, basically. I think they had Saul ready to go. And they didn't call her. So then, you know, then they kind of had to just plug her back into the system here. And then also, I mean, looking like with Fatal Influence, right? One of the ladies, you know, decided not to renew. And then so they had to plug somebody else.
That was for the betterment. Like, Jasmine is fine as hell, but she had no business doing it.
Oh, she stinks. She stinks.
Yeah, yeah.
She has a good Pele kick because she's a soccer player, but...
Other than that, she stinks. Jason, it's okay to say it.
what you thinking, Jason? Am I tripping?
I think that Sean is the best. I mean, Dynamite is too. I was going to say the show's 2 hours, but structurally, top to bottom, when you just look at the... structure of the show, match, promo, wedding, match, promo, whatever. It's the most easily digestible show every single week.
Oh, yeah, because nothing drags. Nothing drags.
Nothing, exactly. Nothing overstays its welcome. Everything, maybe it's a little shorter than you expected. That's it. So structurally, Sean puts on the best show, period. And I agree with everything you guys said about, like, the presentation thing. Obviously, that's the singular job of the developmental brand, so obviously he's going to put a focus on that. But he does it well, so credit where credit is due. Sometimes he just throws matches out there and it's just like, well, this isn't a Tony Khan, like everybody's been waiting for this match. This is just like, all right, two guys or two gals, and it just kind of is whatever. But so for the most part, yeah, I agree with basically everything he said.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ray, that was an awesome discussion, sir. Thank you for bringing that topic to the show.
I appreciate it. We don't talk enough about we're talking about the bookers, but not like structure like that. And for the record, Ghetto trash.
Oh,
Delirious and or Tommy Dreamer both trash. Corey Bauer kind of trash. Good in some instances. What's my boy in GCW, Brett? My boy Brett out there cooking in certain things, but in certain other things, trash. I'm just mad, but yeah.
Jesus.
Maybe one day we'll hit the indie guys.
All right.
What about Greg DeMarco?
No, I'm playing. Hey, Greg, we love you.
Everybody love hates you. Greg. That's an actual T-shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com. Everybody hates Greg, or everyone hates Greg. One of those two things.
Shout out to Navajo Warrior and Thugnificent. If you know, you know.
All right. Guys, this has been a fun show. We got a little hot early on. I like it. It's good podcasting. We had a great segment here at the tail end, thanks to our guest, Ray Cash. I'm going to go back around the room, and we didn't do an intro. That's on me, but I can do an outro and thank my co-host. I'm going to start with Bucky's tag team partner, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, thank you for your energy on another fun show.
Great show, fellas. Always a good time. Ray, come back anytime, buddy.
And the host of the Rob the Genius podcast, the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data, the official shoot bear of the Mindless Wrestling podcast, the man with the golden shovel, and Ray Cash's papa.
Sperm donor. Pay my mama her child support.
Oh, wait, what the hell? Hold on now. Don't throw that kind of bad.
Whoa, easy, big dog, easy.
Okay, look,
Rob,
sir.
ChatGPT's in the government systems, man. It just heard that.
Look, man. No, look, I don't want 5-0 showing up in my house.
Knock, knock, knock.
It's okay.
And the yin to Rob's yang, the pain in Rob's ass, Mr. Ray Cash, special guest here tonight, always fourth chair on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Sir, thank you for your presence and your energy.
Hey, man, look. Let me speak positively on you boys. I love you guys, genuinely, truly. Even Rob, I always have a blast coming on here. You guys always give me great conversation ideas, and as DJ will tell you, I'm not really doing any wrestling podcasts. So if I come up with an idea, my first shit is going to DJ.
Well, bring it, man, bring it. We're always looking for content.
And I appreciate you guys. Thank you. Always a blast. Good stuff.
And we love you too, sir. And as always, I'm the man with the award-winning and holy beard. You have been listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Thank you for making it this far with us. Remember, you can call it pro wrestling. You can call it sports entertainment. You can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring, and we are out of here till next week. Intro music provided royalty-free by Audionautics. That's www.audionautics.com. My go-to for all my podcasting royalty-free music needs.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.